I'm Nash Wedderburn, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. When planning for retirement, the selection process for a personal longevity strategy can at times be met with trepidation. In many scenarios, it is often the implication of the trade-offs when selecting a longevity strategy. Today, we will take a deeper dive into this monthly's Modern Retirement Report. My guest today is Total Wealth Strategist America's Ainsley Carbone and investment strategist Justin Waring, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. It is Thursday, September 19th. Ainsley and Justin, welcome back, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
So I know we want to dig a little deeper into this report. Can we start by just painting the picture? I'll pivot that to Ainsley to kick us off.
Yeah, absolutely. So the concept of the liquidity, longevity, legacy, or the 3L framework has been really well received by clients and advisors just because it makes sense, it's intuitive, and it's really helpful in organizing complicated balance sheets. But what isn't as always straightforward is when it comes to implementing it, so how each strategy is sized. So while all three strategies are pretty essential in the whole 3L mm-hmm. framework, with this report, we decided to really just focus on the longevity strategy. And the reason for that is because once it's sized, it kind of like sets the stage for the other strategies, meaning the liquidity and the legacy strategies. So in this report, we went through and we went through some of the considerations when it comes to sizing and selecting the right longevity strategy. And we just discussed how each one of your decisions can impact and manipulate your projected outcomes.
Great. Thank you. So Justin, the biggest concern has been around the speculation of recession and the possibility of entering a bear market, as we've heard continuously, even this past summer. How are you addressing that concern in the report, essentially?
So the first thing to note is that regardless of whether those concerns are well-timed, it's never too early to prepare and take common sense steps to mitigate bear market damage. And what we found in the bear market guidebook we published last year, and we've sort of iterated on many times since, is that it is relatively cheap to protect against bear markets. What is relatively expensive is investors who try to change the risk level of their whole portfolio to deal with what is really rare short-term windows of bear markets. And so the first thing we have to recognize is that for the longevity strategy, bear markets have very limited implications because the first thing that manages the cash flow needs in the immediate term is the liquidity strategy. And so when we think about how large to make the liquidity strategy to prepare and mitigate bear market damage, that is really the main way through which we think about mitigating bear market damage. And sort of following up from a blog that we also wrote recently called How Much Cash Is Too Much, we believe that investors should really prepare, our general guidance is 3 to 5 years of cash flow needs in the liquidity strategy. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that there's a slight variation on that, which is that higher risk portfolios tend to have bigger drawdowns that last longer. And as a result, they might need slightly larger liquidity strategies, mm-hmm. whereas less aggressive portfolios don't require nearly as much capital because the drawdowns are relatively brief. And so it's really through the liquidity strategy that we manage the bear market damage, which frees up the other two L's to think about growth over the long term.
So then Ainsley, I guess building off of what Justin's saying, when incorporating market risk, what are you suggesting that investors consider when it comes to developing the longevity strategy?
So oftentimes in a financial plan, investors associate risk with volatility, but there's really kind of a disconnect there. In the general sense of risk, it can be defined as a situation that's involving exposure to danger, harm, or loss. And while that's fitting for market volatility, that's not really the only risk that's dealt with within a financial plan. So really the goal of our financial plans are to be able to meet future spending needs. So the risk of an ill-prepared financial plan should be thought of as the likelihood of meeting or not meeting your spending objectives. So I think by reframing risk in that term, in the sense of whether or not you're going to be able to meet your spending objectives, it can help investors keep their focus on their long-term goals so that they don't really let the short-term volatility kind of throw them off from their long-term financial plan. Yeah. So of course, that's much easier said than done. But when it comes to the 3L framework, especially just like Justin was saying, when you have an appropriately sized and structured liquidity strategy, mm-hmm. it really allows you to to stay focused on your long-term goals within the longevity strategy so that you can actually take on the appropriate asset allocation to allow that appropriate long-term growth.
Absolutely. And I know we're beating up risk a little bit this morning, but staying in that same vein, one of the phrases that you guys mentioned in the report is finding a balance, especially when addressing the concept of risk, which we've talked about, the tolerance and volatility. Can you both explain a little bit more on that topic?
Yeah, so when trying to determine the right balance of risk in your plan, it's helpful to first think about your objectives and how you're going to prioritize those objectives, because there are really inherent trade-offs when it comes to sizing and selecting the longevity strategy. So balance for one investor is going to be completely different from the other investor, depending on what it is that they're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. So for instance, someone who prioritizes spending certainty will likely have a well-funded longevity strategy or a more conservative allocation in their longevity strategy, because they're willing to accept the fact that it will likely lead to an otherwise smaller legacy strategy in exchange for that longevity certainty. Because really the balance that we're trying to find in selecting our longevity strategies is whether or not we're okay accepting a probability of failure or a likelihood of having to reduce our spending during our lifetime, or are we looking to maximize our legacy strategies? So it's really, when it comes down to finding that balance, you want to figure out what it is that you're willing to accept, what it is that you're not willing to accept, and really using that kind of as your guide when it comes to finding that right balance of risk in your strategies.
Good way of putting it. I'll pivot over to you, Justin. Any feedback on that?
What this report does for the first time is it demonstrates that you can add more money to your longevity strategy in order to fund it better, you know, to further reduce the probability of needing to cut spending, or you can cut spending. Mm-hmm. Or you can choose a different level of risk, right? These are different levers that you can pull. For the first time, we're really showing people what those trade-offs are, mm-hmm. and letting investors then take those considerations and match them with the implications for how well-funded the legacy strategy is. And one of the things that we found is that it's a non-linear sort of set of levers. So you can change the amount of funding that you have in your longevity strategy, which allows you to have more in your legacy strategy, but you might need to accept a higher probability of failure. And so it's a little bit complicated. And so we tried to sort of jump to the conclusion, run through a case study to try to illustrate these things. But at the end of the day, investors who don't have a defined legacy goal, mm-hmm. of leaving at least a certain amount of bequest, it's going to be a choice. They have the luxury of choosing what strategy that they want. People who do have a distinct legacy strategy, that is a useful constraint, to be honest. If you want to leave exactly $10 million or at least $10 million to your kids, that is a useful constraint because it really does hone you in. You have a much narrower set of choices in your longevity strategy. For most people, the main decision will be deciding how flexible am I willing to be on spending? Because that flexibility gives you a lot of options. Mm-hmm. If you're more flexible on spending and you have no legacy goals that you need to meet, it gives you basically free rein. But most of us have constraints that, you know, either psychological or in our actual budgets, mm-hmm. that wouldn't allow us to be very flexible with our spending. And so those constraints lead to a narrower set of options. We still have options. But I think that's really what the core of this report is helping people walk through those actual implications and making the decision on, you know, how do they want to balance making sure that they can meet their lifetime expenses and then also leave as much as possible to the next generation or to philanthropy?
Absolutely, Justin. So kind of just pick up something that you both mentioned earlier in the conversation, the 3 L's, right? How does the 3 L framework play a role into adjusting for risk in a portfolio?
Yeah, so adjusting the risk level of the longevity strategy, for example, can improve your ability to sustain a spending rate.
Okay.
That when we say spending rate in the report, I think it's important to note that we're talking often about the amount of spending out of the longevity part of the portfolio, just the longevity strategy. And that there's two ways of adjusting that. Obviously, you can adjust your overall actual dollar amount spending, or you can increase the funding or decrease the funding of the longevity strategy. So if you wanted to spend 5% of the longevity strategy, you can fund it with 20 times the spending rate, or you could take the amount that you have in there and decide to reduce spending so that it's only 5%. And so it's like this sort of is a universal framework that allows you to make your spending decisions, your risk level decisions, and also see the implications that it has for how much wealth will be left over at the end of a 30-year period. So that you'll know what you can leave to the next generation or to philanthropy.
Absolutely. Great. So before I let you guys go, any key thoughts or final highlights that you want to leave us with?
I'd really just say, when it comes down to, if you're ever feeling doubtful of your strategy or your investment strategy, your portfolio, your financial plan, and if that doubt is being caused by near-term volatility or events or anything that's going on in the near term, I think it's really just important to focus on the long term, look at the long-term outlook, because that's really what we need to stay focused on. And I think the 3L framework provides us with a way to do that, but it really definitely takes discipline. So we understand that it's much easier said than done, but I think we're able to, at least within CIO, I feel like we've been able to come up with a lot of useful content recently, and our financial advisors can be a great resource to our clients. So I think it's just staying focused on the long term, and understanding what it is that you can adjust within your plan to make today a little bit more comfortable so that we can still achieve our goals way down the road.
Got it. And Justin, anything from you?
I think one of the interesting takeaways from this was that it's very, very difficult to spend 5% of your net worth every year.
Yep.
Obviously we hold out hope that that's possible, but for 30 years, 5% spending amount is difficult to sustain given our current capital market assumptions. So I think this report also helps people who are not at retirement yet sort of work towards building enough capital to support them in retirement. It sort of does help answer that question that I think a lot of people have, which is, how much money do I actually need to enter retirement?
Great. Thank you both again for joining us this morning.
All right.
Thank you.
Once again, we've been joined by Total Wealth Strategist America's Ainsley Carbone and Investment Strategist America's Justin Waring, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. There are many publications available now on UBS Online Services. For UBS clients, you can contact your financial advisor to receive a copy of the report. Top of the morning, we'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
Time frames may vary. Strategies are subject to individual client goals, objectives, and suitability. This approach is not a promise or guarantee that wealth or any financial results can or will be achieved.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/working with us. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.